G'day, and welcome to another episode of Left After Breakfast, coming to you from Melbourne, Australia, broadcast from the studios of 3CR, your only radio left. My name is Susanna Duffy. In this episode of Left After Breakfast, we're still looking at the Anzac legacy, this time the legacy of our Indigenous men and women.
3CR.
So it's Anzac Day tomorrow. Let's have a little chat about Anzacs. More than 1,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people served in the First World War, and more than 4,000 in the Second World War. Then, of course, there was the Boer War from 1899 to 1902. Before Federation, the colonies were responsible for sending troops to South Africa. Indigenous soldiers served in the Light Horse units after joining up as regular soldiers. Due to poor record keeping, no one knows for sure how many actually went and how many actually came home. At the beginning of the First World War, any attempts by Indigenous people to enlist were rejected, though many did serve by hiding their true identities. However, by 1917, there was a new military order which stated, half-castes may be enlisted in the Australian Imperial Force, provided that the examining medical officers are satisfied that one of the parents is of European origin. Aboriginal soldiers were among those who fought at Gallipoli. At the start of the Second World War, that previous racist policy was dropped, and any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men were allowed to enlist. A conservative estimate of perhaps 1,000 servicemen and women fought in the Second World War. But given the previous conflict and its numbers, it's likely to be far more than that, particularly given that women also enlisted. Once again, record keeping was very poor. With the growing fears of a Japanese invasion of Australia, nearly 1,000 Torres Strait Islanders joined Australia's war effort between 1942 and 1945. Now, this is a high number, considering the population counted only in the thousands. They later became the Torres Strait Light Infantry Battalion and fought side by side with other Australians. Despite risking their lives and serving as tirelessly as that of non-Indigenous personnel, they received only one-third of the pay of other Australian soldiers. Following a strike of some of the battalion in late December of 1943, the army agreed to increase the soldiers' pay to two-thirds of that of the non-Indigenous soldiers. These Indigenous people served on the ground, in the air, at sea, and on horseback. Their time in the Defence Forces was, for many, their first time being treated as equals. Unfortunately, when they returned to civilian life, they returned to discrimination and prejudice. They were still being ejected from hotels and public places, and they were still denied employment, and they were also denied benefits offered to other returning service personnel. In 1945, after the Second World War ended, a war service land settlement agreement between the Commonwealth and states enabled returned service personnel access to land under soldier settlement schemes. Just as in the schemes introduced after the First World War, Aboriginal personnel were excluded. This is particularly punishing because the scheme offered land that had always been Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands. This is how we as Australians treated our returned service personnel.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM on digital and on the internet, www.3cr.org.au. 3cr.org.au.
Friday, May 1st, is May Day, International Workers Day. Join 3CR all day in our 50th year of coverage in solidarity with the continued struggle for labour rights and fair working conditions for all our communities around the world.
We got May Day specials from regular Friday shows and special presentations from 3CR's programmers from across the grid. For more info, head to www.3cr.org.au/mayday2026.
Friday, May the 1st.
Tune in all day right here on 3CR.
Let me tell you about one of these men, Corporal Harry Thorpe, a military medal. Harry Thorpe was born at the Lake Tyres Mission Station up near Lake's entrance. He enlisted at Sale in February 1916 and embarked for Melbourne in April to join the 7th Battalion in France in July. He was wounded in action at Pozières and also at Bullecourt. Lance Corporal Thorpe was awarded the Military Medal and promoted to Corporal for his conspicuous courage and leadership, which he showed during operations at Brutzinde near Ypres. During the advance of August 1918 at Leonwood, southwest of Vauvillers in France, Thorpe was wounded. He died and was buried in the Heath Cemetery, Harbonnier in France, with his friend William Rawlings, another Indigenous Military Medal winner, who was killed on the same day. George Bennett, a Kamilaroi man, enlisted to serve in the Great War. He was 35 years old, a widower, a labourer. He left the town of Munjindi on the border of New South Wales and Queensland and fought in the trenches in France. He served with the 29th Battalion, and he enlisted as part of the big recruitment drive following the disaster at Gallipoli. He was wounded in action in 1918 and returned to Australia by ship in 1919 with possible mutilations, whatever that may mean, possible mutilations. Remember, this is when Aboriginal men weren't accepted as citizens and freedom was replaced with government policies such as the Protection Act, which controlled every aspect of their lives, from where you could work and live, to who you could marry, to if you could go to the shop or not, or if you could go and visit one of your cousins in the nearby town. So many Indigenous soldiers, like Mr. Bennett, returned home scarred and their sacrifice ignored. So he fought for Australia and never got any honour or respect that he should have received. Some years later, he was arrested and jailed for being drunk and disorderly. 2 days later, he was found dead in his cell. He died there alone. Not much has changed, has it, listener?
3CR.
And then there's Reg Saunders, the first Aboriginal officer in the Australian Army. In April of 1940, a young Victorian Gudinchamara man joined his mates on a troop train to Melbourne. They were leaving their country town to join the war against Germany. Reg Saunders would become Australia's highest profile Indigenous soldier. He would also be one of the first Indigenous commissioned officers in the Australian Army. Saunders was a timber contractor and a keen sportsman from Lake Conder. His family had a history of military service. Both his uncle and his father were World War I veterans. His uncle, William Rawlings, was awarded a military medal for bravery while serving in the 29th Battalion in France. Reg Saunders grew up hearing stories of the Great War from his father and from other Aboriginal men from the Lake Conda district. When Menzies declared that Australia was at war on the 3rd of September 1939, Saunders listened to the Prime Minister's speech, and after talking with his father, he decided to enlist. After 6 months of training at Pakapanyo, he was sent to North Africa, and his first experience of active service was an attack by three Messerschmitts, which he described as a hell of an experience. In April of 1941, Saunders was sent to Greece with his battalion. Their role was to support Allied forces against the coming German invasion. The Allied campaign had little chance of success. The Allies were outnumbered by better trained and better equipped German infantry and armoured divisions. Their campaign was hindered by poor planning, difficult Greek terrain, and poor communication between Allied commanders. In late April, many of the Australians in Greece were withdrawn to Crete. Saunders' battalion was involved in heavy fighting against the Germans on Crete, along with the New Zealand Maori Division. The 27th Battalion helped 15,000 Allied troops retreat for evacuation. Saunders was one of about 3,000 Australians left behind on Crete. With the help of local Cretans, he evaded capture by the Germans for 12 months. He later escaped Crete on a trawler and reached Bardia in Libya. From there, he returned to Australia. In August of 1942, he rejoined his battalion in New Guinea, and from there, his commanding officer nominated him for officer training. He completed his officer training and graduated as lieutenant in December 1944. For the rest of the war, Saunders commanded the battalion's No. 10 platoon in New Guinea before returning to Australia. Saunders held a variety of casual jobs in the post-war years, but he was unable to find anything permanent or long-term. He wasn't eligible for a soldier settlement block or returned soldiers' education courses. But when the Korean War broke out in 1950, he re-enlisted. He was promoted to captain and given command of C Company. He took part in the Battle of Kapyong in 1951. Saunders left the army in 1954 and on many occasions advocated for Aboriginal people's rights. Reg Saunders was a highly respected soldier and spokesperson for Indigenous rights. He died in Canberra in March of 1990. His legacy is not forgotten. You would be forgiven, listener, for not realising the number of Indigenous service personnel that we have had in Australia. Aboriginal people have served in every conflict and peacekeeping mission involving Australia since the 19th century. For many years, the service and sacrifice of these men and women was not adequately recognised, much less commemorated. In 2006, the late Auntie Dot Peters sought to change this, and she initiated the honouring of Aboriginal servicemen and women in Victoria. So in 2007, the first Victorian Aboriginal Remembrance Service was held at the Shrine of Remembrance. The service gives Victorians an opportunity to come together to honour and to recognise the sacrifices and invaluable contributions of Aboriginal servicemen and women to Australia's Defence Force.
When they set up the mission to break the old tradition, the native tongue was not allowed to speak. Auntie Dot at Carrandurrick grew up proud and strong as her grandmother taught her to came from, and the lessons of the mission, she took them on board.
We're all equal.
We're all equal in the arms of the Lord. Last time she saw her dad, he kissed her baby brother, then turned to walk away to the world war. Somewhere off Borneo, a torpedo hit the boat. He never made it back to the Victorian shore. Black fellas fought and died along with their white mates, but the wife and kids back home were just ignored. Even though we're all equal in the arms of the Lord. Grandmother taught her where she came from, and the lessons of the mission, she took them on board.
We're all equal.
We're all equal in the arms of the Lord. We're all equal in the arms of the Lord. Dot made a call to win respect for all who gave without a thought of reward. She said to be true to yourself, and kind to others. We're all equal in the arms of the Lord.
Now, thanks to Auntie Dot Peters, on May the 31st, every year in Victoria, at the Shrine of Remembrance, a special ceremony is held to commemorate all those Indigenous men and women who served their country.
And the lessons of the mission, she took them on board. We're all equal in the arms of the Lord.
Thank you, Dave Arden, for that terrific song about Auntie Dot Peters. And the reality is, listener, Indigenous people continue to be marginalised. We live in a racist society, and not much has changed since those men and women served in the wars. Now, here's a word for you, listener, and Zachary. It's hyperbole and empty rhetoric. The Australian National Dictionary defines Anzacary as the promotion of the Anzac legend in ways that are perceived to be excessive or misguided. Anzac should be mostly private. It should be about the quiet, within family, remembrance of and caring about people who have suffered in war, those who have been killed and not come home, those who have come home injured in body or mind, and those who live with the memory of the dead and the reality of the living. Anzac is about both the forever young and those who grow old, and their families. For most families, commemoration is not speeches by politicians, not parades and wreaths and children waving flags. Instead, it's something families live every day and every week, every month, forever and down through the generations. It's the reparations that families pay for the decisions that governments made to send men and women to war. And Zachary, on the other hand, is very public. It is marches and flags and hymns and speeches. It's the remembrance of war moving from the personal to the public sphere, and with that, from a description of something unspeakable, to something about which it can never say enough. This means projections of pictures of soldiers onto the walls of the Australian War Memorial, promotions for the rarest tank in the world, battlefield tours, Gallipoli cruisers and surf boat races, young people wrapping themselves in Australian flags at Anzac Cove, or getting drunk in the streets of Kamakali and shouting Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi. And Zachary is also memorabilia and knick-knacks, ministers and officials making emotional speeches to nostalgic audiences about the Anzac legend. And Zachary is sentiment and nostalgia, and it is nationalism, which some people mistake for patriotism, but it's really jingoism. And Zachary tries to make simplistic sense out of war and its effects, to comprehend things that are not really comprehensible. It plays to our emotions because we prefer not to think too deeply about war. After the First World War, the Great War, the war to end all wars, King George V had a king's penny, or dead man's penny, a commemorative medal presented to bereaved subjects. On the medal it said, "He died for freedom and honour." No need to question whether the death was worth it. Indeed, no need to question how worthless the death was. The king had provided the comforting answer.
3CR.
I will leave you with some more from Dave Arden. Don't go overboard on Anzac Day tomorrow. Try and remember what the day is supposed to be for. And that's basically a private day.
My great uncles were ordinary men. They fought in the First World War. Left a wife and children. When the army came to call, they were sectioned at Gallipoli. Stood on the Turkish shore. All around so many young faces. Some didn't come back at all. When freedom called, those wounded men and women stood tall. When freedom called, oh God, isn't nothing left at all. When freedom called,
Arden came from Framlingham. He fought in the Second World War. A full-grown man, but not a citizen. He couldn't vote under the law. They sectioned him in Gunditj Mara country, on the Western District shore. Drafted as an MP to uphold the army's law. When freedom called, those Gunditj men and women stood tall. When freedom called, oh God, is there nothing left at all? When freedom called,
those men would sit there quiet, go drifting in their minds. It seemed to me they could see the spirits of the ones they left behind.
They fought for more than just their homeland. They fought for respect, to walk down a road like any other man. Lest we forget, when freedom calls, those Mara men and women stood tall. When freedom calls, oh God, is there nothing left at all? When freedom calls, those good little men and women stood tall. When freedom calls.
Mayday all night.
Are you a night owl?
I'm not.
Burning the midnight oil?
Working the night shift?
Or just an insomniac?
For one night only. Talk Back with Attitude is taking your calls
from 12:30 till 5 a.m.
Friday, May the 1st.
Ring us.
That's, of course, if we survive.
From 12:30 a.m. to 5 a.m.
till we get tired.
Yeah! Mayday.
A special broadcast on 3CR Radio.
For the third year running. The 1st of May.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for the ride. See you next week. Same time, same place. Until then, it's cheerio and ciao from Left After Breakfast.